We are recording today on the traditional, ancestral, and unceded territories of the Coast Salish peoples, including Tsleil-Waututh, Squamish, Musqueam, and Comox First Nations.
Hey, Love to Sew listener. We're currently in our podcast off season, so we're taking a little break from recording right now.
Yes, but while we rest and do some sewing, we're sharing our favorite episodes of Love to Sew. Keep in mind that these episodes are throwbacks to our earlier podcasting days, so think of these as fun little flashbacks.
Yes, I mean, so many new patterns and fabrics and inspirational sewists have come along since these early recordings, but we love these episodes so much, and we are so excited to share them with you again.
We'll be back in March 2021 with our new season of Love to Sew.
See you then. Hello and welcome. I'm Helen.
And I'm Caroline.
And we love to sew. This is a podcast for makers where we talk about sewing a handmade wardrobe and bring you interviews with inspiring creatives and small business owners in our community.
Today we are talking about sewing coats, what to be aware of before you sew your first coat, what fabrics to consider, interfacing options, and how to sew with wool. We also discuss our coat sewing projects and encourage you to try making outerwear this winter.
Or summer if you're in Australia.
Hello, Helen.
Hi, Caroline.
I'm still sick.
I can hear that. Slowly but surely on recovery.
Yes. I'm actually feeling better today. The doctor told me 48 hours after I started my antibiotics, I'd start feeling better. And yesterday, like afternoon, was 48 hours. And I was like, I'm starting to feel better. And then I was like, oh, that makes sense. Yeah. That's exactly what my doctor told me would happen. So yeah, I'm good. I'm feeling good. All right. We have a few questions that we want to get to. Do you want to read this one, Helen? Because I'm sick.
I can totally relate to this question too. This one is from Megan. What advice do you have for someone who's working a full-time job with a side hustle as a sewist? I've started into the deep dive this year on my side business, Megan by Design, making custom garments and getting involved with competitions and enhancing my own portfolio. I've loved every second of it. What I don't love about it is that I feel like I can't focus on my day job. Whether it's because I'm too excited about what I'm making at the time or stressed about a time crunch, I can't take my head out of the sewing room no matter how hard I try. I don't want my productivity to falter at work because I know how important it is to give 100% everything I'm responsible for. Sadly, I am only 20 and still in school, so dropping everything to pursue my dream job isn't an option right now. I'm determined to do both, and I'm passionate about sewing just as much as I am about being a successful student, but I just don't want to sabotage one or the other because of my lack of focus. Any suggestions are extremely appreciated. Love the podcast. Love you both. Listen every week on my commute home, and I love all your inspiring stories as well as how real you are about the world of sewing. Thanks for your help.
Hi, Megan.
Megan. This is a great question. I can really relate to this because I did the balance of the day job and the side hustle for 2 years, and it was really hard. It was so hard at work to put aside the sewing stuff and not think about it. And I would look forward to my lunch breaks where I would go and sit on the couch and like sketch out design ideas or sometimes even answer customer emails. Like, I was lucky enough that I was working in a pretty relaxed work environment where my boss knew that I had a side hustle and it was all like fine. So it was okay for me to be doing that kind of thing. But when I was on the clock, so to speak, or actually having to do something for work and be really focused, sometimes it was really hard. And I don't know if I have like a catch-all solution for this, but one of the things that I would do is I would have a notebook handy at my desk. And anytime I thought of something that I wanted to like rush to my computer and like look up that pattern or rush and like read a bunch of blog posts or make sure that I, you know, made a note of something or thought through a whole process, like I would just take that idea and write it down and put it down on this piece of paper next to my desk. So it's like you're almost taking that idea in your head and you're just saying, okay, I'm doing something with you. I'm putting you aside, but I'm not like forcing myself to try and remember you for later. I just am writing it down. And then later you can go and look at your list and you have all those things. So when you get home in the evening or on the weekends, you can go through all those thoughts that you had. And some of them might not be relevant anymore.
Yeah, I really love this idea. It's almost like writing it down is giving you a chance to let go of it for the moment.
Yeah.
You're putting it somewhere, safekeeping.
Yeah.
I also think giving yourself time every morning, Megan, before your day job to work on your side hustle, even if it's just 20 or 30 minutes of checking emails, updating your to-do list, whatever you need to do to sort of feel like you've touched that thing today already. And then you might not feel so much like you need to think about it during the day because you've already handled that in the morning, and then you can come back to it in the evening. I think that might be really helpful.
Yeah.
So that you're not waking up going straight to work and being like, but what about my side hustle? You know?
Yeah. Feeling all day like you have to do this one thing when you really want to be doing another thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So trying to plan your day in that way.
That's great advice.
But yeah. I mean, you're 20. You're killing it, Megan. Like, you're in school, you have a job, and you're recognizing the fact that you want to give 100% to everything that you do. Like, you're already ahead of the curve.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
All right, we have another question. Do you have any tips for sewing with brocade fabrics? The first step of the dress pattern I'm using says to apply fusible interfacing, but I'm too scared to do it. The fabric I'm using is a polyester nylon blend that did not come with any care instructions. Do you think steaming and pressing might ruin the fabric? I'm reading conflicting information from different sources. Some say to cover it with a press cloth before steaming and ironing, while others say steaming should be limited since this will cause watermarks to appear.
Great question.
Yeah.
Lots of stuff in here. First of all, I want to say that you don't necessarily have to fuse your interfacing. Just because the pattern says to fuse the interfacing doesn't mean it needs to be fused. You could choose a non-fusible interfacing and sew it in. That's always an option.
Yeah. So that's like underlining, basically, right?
Exactly.
So you're applying your interfacing by sewing it along all of the edges inside the steam allowance so that you're not going to see that stitch line once you sew up your garment.
Exactly.
Another sort of blanket statement that I want to make about this, and I think this will probably answer your question, is when you're wondering about fabric care instructions, like if you're confused or you're not sure what to do or you're afraid of treating a fabric in a certain way, the best solution, the only solution in my opinion, is taking a scrap of that fabric and doing some tests. Mm-hmm. So don't use your pieces from your final garment yet. Take some of the scraps from when you cut out your garment and go over to your iron and test it out. Get it wet. See if that does stain and see how the fabric reacts. Like, the only real way to be sure is to do those tests yourself.
Yeah.
So that's always what I recommend to customers that are emailing us. Often customers will email us and ask, can I stray from the care instructions? And it's like, sure, you might be able to, but you got to do tests yourself, right?
Yeah.
You have to test it out yourself because everybody, works with fabrics differently. So it helps to just have that experience yourself.
Yeah, that's really good advice. So yeah, there's not really a specific answer we can give you on this matter because we would do exactly that. We would test it first before answering this question.
So. Yeah, it's so dependent on fiber content, on the type of weave, on the type of fabric. Like, even if I had that fabric in front of me, especially with a brocade because it's such a unique weave and a unique fabric, you just got to do tests.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, on that note, are we ready to talk about sewing coats?
I think we're ready. I mean, I'm ready.
We are feeling really inspired right now because we are, well, almost finished sewing our coats for the season.
Yes.
We are sewing them with a friend of ours, and all three of us are making the Grainline Studio Yates coat with the big lapels and the cool inseam pocket.
All in gray fabric.
Yeah, it's true. We're not being very exciting.
No, but we all wanted to have a basic coat to fit into our everyday wardrobe, and I think we're all going to achieve that. So
yeah,
it's really exciting to see these coats come together.
Yeah, and it's been a fun pattern to work with. It came out last year, kind of at the end of the season, so seeing a lot of them popping up this year now that the season's come around again, and it's pretty cool to see this design. I really like it.
So through the process of sewing our own coats, we decided we had to do an episode all about sewing coats because it was a really fun process. We want to share our experience, but we also want to share all of the other tips and tricks that we've learned over the years. Helen, you have sewn a lot of coats in your day.
I mean, how many is a lot?
I mean, you're a pretty experienced coat maker. I think you, how many coats have you made? Tell me the coats you've made.
I made the closet case Claire coat. Mm-hmm. I've made the Grainline duffel coat and now the Grainline Yates coat. And I've made a lot of jackets as well. I made the Ellsworth coat.
Kelly Anorak.
The Kelly Anorak jean jackets.
Yeah.
Wixton. I don't know.
Yeah.
not like, I wouldn't say that I'm a coat making expert by any means, no, but I've made 3 wool coats. So I'm like fairly experienced with how to put together a wool coat at this point.
And I learned a lot of tailoring techniques when I was in fashion school. I haven't made a lot of coats since then, but I did make some coats when I was in school. And that knowledge kind of sticks with you.
Yeah, so it's an intense experience.
It is, yeah.
And we also just want to acknowledge that we know it's not winter everywhere and that not all of you are in coat climates. And we hope that this episode will still be interesting for you nonetheless. But we did want to talk about coats.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You lucky people that are having summer right now.
Or summer all the time.
Yeah, or summer all the time. So in this episode, we are going to focus on coats, not jackets. But a lot of the tips that we're giving are going to be applicable to both.
Yeah. So what's the difference between a coat and a jacket?
I don't know. They're the same, aren't they?
Not according to the internet. So a jacket goes down to the waist and a coat goes down to your thighs, mm-hmm. in theory.
Yes. I concur.
The Grain Line duffel coat has a short option.
Yeah.
And it's made out of wool and it's still...
A coat is like something that's going to give you more warmth.
Yes.
So you wear a coat in the winter. You don't necessarily wear a jacket in the winter.
Yeah, I agree. I think of a coat as being something that you would wear for warmth. On the internet, when I was researching this, it was like on the internet.
On the internet.
Jackets are for fashion and coats are for utility, which I don't really think is true anymore. You know, mm-hmm. both are fashion.
Yeah.
And both can be utility, but coats are rooted in the warmth.
Yeah.
Area.
I get what you're saying. We're good at podcasting.
But originally the word coat comes from an item of clothing in the Middle Age called a coat of mail, or what we might be more familiar with as chain mail. So that's where the word coat comes from. And it's to protect you against weapon attacks. It's made out of a heavier material. And so from that, we get coats. In theory, I don't know.
Do you think our Yates coats are going to protect us against weapon attacks?
I don't know. We could try it out.
Jeez. This is taking a dark turn.
We'll go do some fencing or something.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I'd do fencing with you. That'd be fun. You also have a note in here. Jackets stem from undercoats, which typically only go to the upper thigh.
Yes, jackets being something that was worn underneath other garments originally and now has become a piece of outerwear.
Like in fencing.
Like in fencing. Oh my gosh. So is making a coat hard?
No, nothing is hard in sewing.
Oh, I mean,
don't you think that coat making is up there with like jeans making and lingerie making as one of those things that people are like, oh God, I'm not ready to make mm-hmm. coats or
yeah.
Don't make me give you a pep talk, people. You can do anything.
It's true. I mean, I always like to think about sewing as just a series of steps, and mm-hmm. I'm familiar enough with patterns that I can follow the steps, even if they're confusing. I can use Google. I will be fine. You know, like I can make it work. So I think that you can definitely make a coat. If you can sew, you know, a basic tee, you can make a coat. I don't see why not.
Yeah, totally. And coat patterns can be pretty simple. Some of them have minimal seam lines like the Yates coat. There are very few seam lines in the Yates coat. So I think fitting can be minimal depending on the pattern that you choose. So if you're a beginner and you're a little bit intimidated by coat making, maybe don't go for a coat with a whole bunch of princess seams and fitting. You can go for something a little bit more oversized or not, totally up to you. But I think there are some options out there if you want a little bit more simplicity. Mm-hmm. And you also get to sew with wool.
Yeah.
Which is pretty great.
Yeah. It's one of those fabrics that is a true joy to work with. It might seem a little intimidating because it's a bit beefy, or it can be beefy.
Yeah.
But it is really fun to sew, so much fun to press. It's just a dream.
Similar to denim, like it's another one of those things where you're like, oh, I'm so intimidated by making jeans, but sewing with denim is such a treat. So wool is kind of the same thing.
Yeah. And if you don't want to use wool, there are lots of alternatives out there as well.
Yeah. Okay. So things to know before you get into coat making. I like this list.
Things to know. Just to prep. You want to mentally prepare yourself.
Yes. We're going to mentally prepare you right now. The prep is going to take the longest. And that is true.
Yeah. It takes a long time to prepare just to get ready. The sewing of the coat itself, not so bad. The preparation of the pattern, cutting out the pattern, fusing all the things, It's a lot. I'm not going to lie to you. But if you keep that in mind, you can kind of separate out your sewing time accordingly. Mm-hmm. And you can say, okay, tonight I'm just going to cut out the paper pattern, because with coats, you have linings often. So there's more pieces. So everything just takes longer.
Yeah, there are a lot of pieces, even with the Yates coat, where it's not a complicated coat. There are objectively not that many pieces when you account for the shell pieces and the interfacing pieces and the lining pieces. You have a lot of pattern pieces in front of you that can be a little bit intimidating. So one tip that we have is, if you can, have your pattern printed in a copy shop version so that you're not having to tape together like 100 pages.
Yeah, this is the moment to use the copy shop.
Exactly. So if you can do that, consider doing that for this project.
Yeah. And then you have to cut out the shell, the lining, and the interfacing. So that can take time as well. That could be a separate block of time.
Yes.
A separate evening perhaps that you sew. So
yeah. And what I liked about our process with sewing coats is that we sort of split it up. Like, we cut out the shell and then we interfaced and then we cut out the lining, and we sort of like split it up so it wasn't like hours upon hours of cutting.
Yeah.
So that felt a little bit easier, I guess.
Yeah, you can think about the order in which you want to do things.
Mm-hmm. So properly interfacing your coat is going to take time. This mm-hmm. is a place where you really want to take your time, because you're going to be interfacing some big pieces. Some coats have the entire front interfaced, so you need to take your time and really make sure that you're fusing things properly and mm-hmm. that the fusible is really sticking on there. You might want to consider block fusing. So if you have enough fabric, you can fuse a whole length of fabric and then cut out your pieces so that they're already fused when you cut them out.
Yeah, a lot of coat patterns will have more fusing than you might think.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of fusing happening, and there it's all there for a very specific reason. So also don't skip the fusing.
Don't,
if you're putting in all the effort to make the coat, don't skip the interfacing. Either do a good job with your fusing, or even take it a step further and sew everything in by hand. I mean, just make sure there's some interfacing in there.
Yes, absolutely.
And once you get all that done, the actual sewing of the coat is pretty fast.
Yep.
Yeah, you just assemble the shell, assemble the lining, stick them together.
And then birth the coat.
And then birth the coat. We'll get into that.
So we did want to mention that coat making is expensive. Mm-hmm. It can be expensive. It's definitely an investment. Not necessarily going to be more expensive than buying a high quality coat in a store. But you kind of want to mentally prepare yourself for the fact that this is going to be an investment project.
Yeah. Yeah. Because you do need to buy all of those materials, and assuming like some buttons or toggles or zippers or something. So there's definitely some different pieces at play here, and you can decide how much you want to spend in each area. There's some ways you can save some money, but just think of it as an investment piece, because it is something you'll probably wear for years to come, especially if you do a really nice job with it, and it will last you. So it's worth it, in my opinion.
Yeah, me too. So I did think of some ways that you can save money when you're gathering your materials for making a coat.
Uh-huh.
And one of those ways is getting your coating in a fabric swab. And the reason why I thought of this is because you got your coating from me.
I don't know why you gave away that coating. It's so beautiful.
It is beautiful. I mean, you better believe, as sewists, we collect fabric, and some of us might have more coating than we need.
Yeah.
So I went to a fabric swab with Helen. We actually organized the fabric swab, and I was looking at my stash, and realistically, I decided that I didn't want this, you know, gray wool coating anymore. I thought, I have another gray wool coating that I'm going to use, so let me give this one away. And then you won in that scenario, right?
Yeah.
You got to keep that fabric. So try maybe organizing a fabric swap. You can also look at thrift stores. Like, thrift stores can have some really high quality wools.
Yeah. One thing you might want to consider is buying fabric on sale at the end of the season for next year.
Yeah.
So fabric stores will stock wool. It might not all sell. And then at the end of the season, they're going to discount it because they don't want it in the shop for spring and summer. So that's a great opportunity for you to save some money, prepare yourself for next year. Just do that, you know, every year if you want to make a coat every year.
Yeah.
Not that you need to, but
ask for fabric store gift certificates for Christmas.
Ooh,
and then invest in like a really nice, you know, length of wool coating. And then you can also go for like a lower price point on your wool. So you don't necessarily have to have like 100% wool. There are some really beautiful wool blend coatings out there. So keep that in mind. If you want to save a little bit of money, you can go with a wool poly blend, and it'll be just as beautiful.
Yeah. for yep. sure. And because we're investing in this project, this is the moment where you want to make a muslin. You do not want to skip this step. Even if your coat is a little bit forgiving in the fit, like the Yates is a pretty forgiving fit, but we made our muslins and we both ended up making several adjustments to make it perfect, because it's, again, this investment piece, not only financially, but your time, right? Like, you're going to put a lot of time into this. So you do want to do the muslin phase, make sure that you're happy with the way that it's going to fit. And when you're making the muslin, we advise you, if you're using just cotton muslin, to consider that your end fabric is going to be a bit beefier. It's going to be thicker. You're going to have more layers. So when you're looking at things like sleeve fit, think about the fact that it's going to be thicker and that you might want to wear a sweater underneath it, and try to consider these things when you're just looking at your cotton muslin.
Yeah, even like if you're making your muslin out of just cotton muslin, you're not having that lining layer, you're not having that interfacing layer when you're trying it on. So definitely I would wear at least a bulky sweater underneath your muslin when you're trying it on, just to give yourself a feel for how that's going to be in the finished garment.
And your final coat will hold its shape better too. So think about that if your muslin's kind of drooping and draping in certain spots. Once you're using a thicker wool, that is going to look different. And this just takes time. It takes experience. So just do your best. Mm-hmm. The important thing you're looking for is, you know, can you bend the elbows? Can you close the front? Can you lift your arms up? Basic stuff.
Yeah. Can you reach your steering wheel when you're wearing the coat,
right? Which I always have trouble with because I have a bit of a broad back. So when I put my arms forward, it gets really tight across the back. It gets really tight across the bicep, and I just feel constricted. So I almost always do a broad back adjustment on coats. It's a pretty simple. I have a little tutorial on my website. We can link to that. And it just involves, you know, widening the back of the coat or the back of the pattern at the shoulders to give yourself that extra room so you can reach forward, steering wheel, or grabbing somebody, or
baby wrangling.
Baby wrangling.
I mean, who knows?
Lifting rocks on the beach. Yeah. I mean, whatever.
What other adjustments did you make to yours?
I also made my pockets bigger because I love a big roomy pocket. If you have made any of my patterns, you know how much I love a big roomy pocket. So I made the pocket a little bit bigger on the grain line Yates just to have some extra room for my hands.
It was pretty funny when you were trying on the sample and you were like, this is a pocket for ants. I need large pockets.
I think I do have kind of big hands.
I have big hands too.
Yeah.
Smaller pockets don't bother me as much as they do you. You're like very
I'm so annoyed by small pockets. Pockets are easy to adjust. So if, you know, the designer has a small pocket, I'm not like cursing their name or anything. Just like, I will change this.
They are easy to adjust. It's true. Yeah. And for me, I also did a broad back adjustment, which was actually my first one. You showed me how to do it. That was really fun. And then I decided to do an FBA, which I didn't necessarily need to do because the Yates coat goes really low in the front. It's got those big lapels and it looked okay. But I was like, really, I'm definitely outside of, you know, the cup size that they have in their pattern as their, you know, standard. So I made that FBA. I made a lot of adjustments. Let me tell you, I did not feel like making all of these adjustments. I fell way behind from you guys because I was spending so much time adjusting my pattern and avoiding adjusting my pattern. I was like, I'm just going to watch you guys for now because I don't feel like, because it's not just adjusting the shell. You have to adjust your liney pieces. You have to adjust your fusible pieces. Yeah. It's like, it's a lot. But I am so happy that I took the time to do those things.
Yeah.
So anyways.
The fit was so much better after you did them.
Oh, yeah.
It was like night and day.
Yeah. And it's kind of fun because you sort of figure it out as you go along. So you can kind of cut up your muslin. Like, I ended up needing more room in the hips, which I always do. I'm definitely outside of their size range in the hips. So we just basically sliced up the side seams and added a wedge of fabric to see like, okay, how much do I actually want extra in there? And then I was able to know how much extra width I needed, like, you know, at the hip line.
Yeah, that's a great tip. I don't think that people necessarily use that process very much, like where you actually cut into the muslin and add the fabric and do the adjustments on the fabric and then take that back to your pattern.
Yeah, but it is really helpful. So I did that. I also, so broad back FBA, I added a wedge at the side seam to give myself a little bit more room in the hip. So it's a little bit more A-line on me, but I'm also an A-line person, if that makes sense. So like a jacket has to be A-line on me because or else it's going to be really big in the shoulders mm-hmm. and the bust. And then I also made my sleeve. I think you did this too. I made my sleeve a little bit bigger because the sleeves were quite tight on all of us. We all ended up adjusting our sleeves to be a little bit bigger, which was quite an easy adjustment.
I think it's intended to be a slimmer fit in the sleeves because it's very elegant.
Yeah, it is very elegant.
But I would like to wear a sweater under my jacket. So I want to accommodate for that. And I really, it's such a pet peeve of mine. If I bend my elbow and it like digs in at all, I'm mm-hmm. so annoyed.
Oh, yeah. You just get annoyed at everything.
I do. Well, you know, when you become a sewist and you have the ability to change these things, then everything is annoying.
Yeah.
You go to try on clothes and you're like, why is it like this?
Yeah. So, I mean, fitting experts would definitely tell you to make one adjustment at a time and then re-muslin. But we're all about breaking the rules.
Yeah.
We made all our adjustments.
All of our adjustments at once.
All of our adjustments at once. And then we just cut into our fabric.
Yeah.
So do as I say, not as I do. Some of those things. Or do as I do and maybe you'll be fine.
Yeah. I think it depends on your personality and the situation and all sorts of things. But it's fun to share.
Our personality is
fairly reckless.
Yeah. I was going to say a bad word, but this is a clean podcast.
So as we were saying, you can get fancy with tailoring methods, but you can also keep it simple for your first coat. So there's lots of information out there about how to properly tailor a coat or a jacket, some couture techniques, some things that some people will say you absolutely have to do. I don't necessarily feel that way. I think that if it's your first or second coat, you can go the easy route and not do any of that fancy stuff just yet. But it's really up to you.
A lot of the time, the pattern instructions will walk you through some of those techniques. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, like if you're making an indie pattern and you like the way that pattern looks in their photos at the end, then you don't necessarily have to go over the top and do all those tailoring techniques. If you just follow the instructions, you'll end up with a coat that looks the way you want it to look.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And we'll talk a little bit about the more difficult parts of sewing a coat so you can maybe practice these techniques or prepare yourself. I think that easing in a sleeve is a little bit tricky on a coat. There's going to be a lot of excess in that sleeve cap that you're going to need to ease into that shoulder seam more than, you know, maybe on a shirt or other projects that you've done. On a coat, there's typically a little bit more. And that can be a little bit tricky, but it's not impossible. It's totally doable. There's a few different methods that you can use for that. And we'll go through those later.
Yeah, this is where your hand sewing is going to come in, mm-hmm. right? And also the fact that wool steams so well is working to your advantage here because it's really easy to steam out those wrinkles with the seam from your iron.
Yeah, totally. You'll notice on most coats that if you like follow the line from your neck to your shoulder and then the sleeve cap has like almost a little bump mm-hmm. on it.
That's
like,
the ease.
That's the ease in there, right? And that's intentional and that gives you that nice coat look.
Yes, totally. So bagging the lining is another kind of tricky part of sewing a coat.
It's so also fun,
really
though.
Fun. It's so fun. It's the final step often right before you sew on your buttons or your closure. So it's really exciting because it's, you know, you're really going to get to see your coat come together and then you get to try it on with a line and slip your hands in. And oh my gosh, I just love that step.
Yeah.
And it's pretty hilarious too.
And that's what we were referring to earlier with birthing the coat. When we had Jessica Nicole on our show, she called it birthing the coat.
Which we get so many people tagging us on Instagram when they're bagging out their coat. Yeah. And they're like, birthing the coat. I love it. Keep tagging us. It's amazing.
Lastly, we want you to prepare yourself for the time that it's going to take to complete this project. So give yourself that time. As we were saying, maybe block out a few different chunks of time so that you can do different aspects of this process and different time periods. Don't try to do it all at once. It's probably not possible. We did this in 6 sewing sessions of about 3 hours each. And we were chatting and eating too. So it's about 18 hours total.
Yeah,
and it went fairly smoothly. And it was nice to just have like 3-hour chunks. So you're never getting overwhelmed with anything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We did probably lose some time like putting away and taking out all of our pieces every time.
Okay, so when you're choosing a pattern, what are some things you might want to think about?
Yeah, so you want to think about how you're going to wear your coat, right? Is it rainy where you are? How often are you going to wear it? Like, think about the weather. Think about the frequency of wear. Think about what you like to wear under it. Like we said, if you're going to be wearing sweaters in the winter, put those sweaters on when you're trying on your muslin. Think about you know, those sweaters when you're picking out your pattern. Yeah.
Do you like to wear scarves? And if you do, then maybe don't choose a coat that's going to interfere with that, with some kind of collar that's going to get in the way of your beautiful scarves.
I know. I'm actually really excited about the Yates coat because it has that beautiful open, large lapel and the open neckline, so you can have a beautiful knotted scarf in front.
Me too. I love wearing scarves. So that's,
me too. So yeah, think about all of those things before you pick out your pattern. Mm-hmm. And also look at what people are making in the community. If you're thinking about making a pattern, check it out on Instagram and see if you like how it looks on different body types.
Yeah.
Maybe find someone with your body type that made it.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, so let's talk about wool.
Yes.
Wool is a natural fiber that comes from the sheep.
Wait, what?
It is very natural and very lovely, and it has a lot of benefits. So one of those is that it retains heat, but it also keeps heat out in the summer.
It does. It goes, it doesn't seem like that's how it should work. You're like, I don't want to wear wool in the summertime. But traditionally, people did wear wool in the summertime because it does keep the heat out. It helps regulate your body temperature more than you would think. Obviously, you're not going to be wearing a heavyweight wool coat in the summertime, but we're talking about like gabardine, something lightweight that you would make a pair of pants out of or something like that, or a skirt, and that would be quite comfortable in the summertime.
Yeah, or like totally different vein, but like a merino wool jersey.
Yes.
That's why that's really popular for athletic wear, right?
Exactly.
It keeps you cool in the summer and warm in the winter.
And it's absorbent. And all wools actually are pretty absorbent. They can absorb up to 1/3 of their weight in moisture, which is great for bodies because we are moist.
Wool is also hypoallergenic.
Mm-hmm. It's wrinkle and flame resistant.
It will last a very long time when you care for it properly.
And it usually doesn't fray, so that's great for beginner sewists.
Yes. And the last thing that we love about wool is that it holds its shape really well.
It
presses really well. Mm-hmm. It's just such a wonderful fabric to work with.
Yeah, you can stretch it and shrink it with just the steam from your iron. It's pretty amazing.
Yes. And it comes in various weights. So like we said, you can go with a lightweight wool if you're working with trousers, and what we're going to talk about next, heavyweight wools for coats.
So Caroline, resident fabric expert, can you give us some hot information about the different wools?
Yes, absolutely.
We might see out there.
Yeah. So the first type of wool that I want to talk about that's great for coats is melton wool. This is going to be the most readily available coating fabric out there. It's comes in so many colors. It comes in a range of price points. You can go for a wool that's blended with more poly or acrylic or nylon to go for a lower price point, or you can go for 100% wool for a more luxurious fabric and a higher price point. So there are a lot of options out there with wool melton. And melton is just a fabric that is quite tightly woven. Often it's a twill weave, and then it's brushed and felted. So at the end of the day, wool melton kind of looks and feels like felt, but it's not. It is a woven fabric. Felt tends to be non-woven, whereas melton is woven. And it often has that clean edge. So again, no fraying, especially no fraying in melton. And it can be quite soft to the touch because of that brushing that happens in the production process.
Cool. I love melton.
Yes, so do I. I also love boucle.
Boucle.
Boucle is that wool coating that has more texture to it. It's going to give you a really cool look from far away. One of the fabrics that we're working with for our coats is a boucle, and you think it looks like animal print from far away.
It does.
Because it has, two colors in it. The boucle yarns they're mixing like a lighter gray and a black. So it ends up looking like an animal print from far away. It's a really cool textile. So boucle fabric is made from boucle yarn, and you can have like lighter weight knit structured boucles. Those are more for sweaters, cardigans, that kind of thing, or a heavier weight boucle coating. So boucle coating maintains that curly texture on the surface from the yarn. So those yarns, what they actually do is there are multiple filaments, and they'll pull one of the filaments to make the other filaments curl.
Oh.
And then they use that yarn to make the fabric. So that's how you get that sort of curly texture. If you look really up close, it kind of looks like poodle poodle fur or something like that.
Yeah.
So it's got this really, really cool texture. One thing to keep in mind is that this is a little bit more difficult to work with. So keep in mind that your pattern may need more interfacing to give it a little bit more structure. Often boucle is on a knit base. So even though you treat it as a coating, the actual base fabric is a little bit stretchy. It's got a little bit of give. So you might want to interface more than the pattern requires, more pieces than the pattern requires. You just have to judge based on how the fabric feels. Another thing with boucle is that because of that curly pile, it tends to shed quite a bit, especially when you're cutting. And on your first few wears, I always recommend lining a boucle fabric. So I would use a boucle wool coating for example, a Berlin jacket that's unlined as like a sort of a layering piece. I would really line it because those little fibers from the curly texture can get on your clothes and they almost look like dog hair or something. Yeah. So that's definitely something to keep in mind when you're working with this type of fabric. The next one we want to talk about, boiled wool.
Everyone's new favorite fabric.
Yes, it is. It's kind of become more and more popular over the past couple of years. And I just pulled this from our website because I think we explain the process quite well on the Blackbird website.
Oh, do you?
Oh, yeah, we do. So boiled wool is a knit fabric that has been agitated in hot water. So this causes the fibers to shrink and creates a beautiful, thick and textured textile. Boiled wool is commonly treated as a coating, but has a little bit of give and can work well for oversized sweaters and cardigans. The edges can be left raw without fraying.
It's pretty cool. And you actually are getting another kind of boiled wool in your shop.
Yes. So the boiled wool that we carry or that we have carried over the past couple of years is a wool and viscose blend. So it is quite lightweight and quite drapey because it's, I believe, 60% viscose and 40% wool. And it's lighter weight. So I would not necessarily recommend that wool for like a tailored coat.
Yeah.
And if you do use it for a tailored coat, you're going to want to interface it really well. So we found this amazing 100% wool boiled wool. It's actually coming out tomorrow. So by the time this episode comes out, it should be in the shop. And it comes in four or five colors. There's like a whole bunch of beautiful grays and a black. So we went pretty basic with this one. But it's heftier. It has a thicker weight. It's not drapey. It's really nice for coat making. Also would be really nice for like a coatigan or a cardigan or something like that, a Berlin jacket. But it's got more structure, so it's great for coat making. Oh my God, it's so gorgeous.
I can't wait to see them.
Yeah, it's a higher price point. It's a beautiful, beautiful textile. Also softer than the other boiled wool that we were carrying.
Less scratchy.
Oh, so, that's cool. You know, we got a little bit of feedback about that one being scratchy. Boiled wool does tend to have a scratchy feel.
Yeah.
And especially the one that we were carrying before, it was a more affordable price point. So we're not talking like high quality wool. So it's not giving you that real softness from wool.
Mm-hmm.
So this one is kind of just a whole different ball game.
Cool.
It's gorgeous. I'm so excited about it. I love it so much. So yeah, wool is really fun to work with. And I just love the fact that like it's called boiled wool because it's actually boiled wool.
Yeah, it's been boiled.
It's been boiled.
What about virgin wool?
Okay, virgin wool. I also carry a virgin wool in the shop. I think we have a little bit left in stock.
But I got some of it.
A little bit cleaned out during the Black Friday sale. But virgin wool actually refers to wool taken from a lamb's first shearing. So it's the softest, finest wool of the sheep's life. And that makes it really, really soft, like cashmere almost. And it is more expensive than regular wool. So when you're talking about like fiber content, 100% virgin wool, that's what we're talking about. You might also come across people referring to virgin wool as wool that has not been used before. So like, not necessarily virgin wool as in like a young sheep's wool, but just wool that is like virgin goods. In the fabric industry, when you say virgin goods, it means it's just been produced and then sold versus like dead stock fabric.
Gotcha.
If that makes sense.
That can be a little confusing.
It can be a little confusing, but generally speaking, if you're like in a fabric store and you're looking at 100% virgin wool, that's what it means. And you can just touch it and you'll know. New sheep. You'll just know when you touch it. It's so soft.
Oh my gosh, it really is.
Yes. And finally, I wanted to touch on tweed because I think tweed is a really great fabric to use for coats. And when you think about tweed, I think often we think about those tweed Chanel jackets, but that really isn't what tweed is in its original form. You know, tweed originated in Scotland, and Helen was doing some fact checking for me, and we found out this fun fact that tweed was originally worn by English noblemen looking to extend their life of leisure. So they were wearing tweed coats to go out and
hunt
or yeah, whatever.
The life of leisure.
Yeah. Horseback riding or whatever.
They need to be warm.
Yeah, so it is a little bit more of a rough texture, and it's a closely woven wool textile with a soft, kind of open, flexible texture. So you're going to see the weave in there. It's not going to be brushed like a melton where you can't really see the fibers or the yarns being woven together. You can really see that weave. And this is an opportunity to have some cool patterns in your fabric. So a lot of the time tweeds will be in a herringbone pattern or a twill pattern or a plaid pattern. There's a lot of color variations in there. So it's really fun. It's a really fun textile to work with for this kind of thing.
Yeah.
Totally. Yeah. Harder to find, I think, maybe in the sewing community. I haven't seen a ton of like beautiful tweed.
It needs a resurgence.
Yeah. Perhaps. I was looking online. I saw some at Mood. But other than that, I didn't find a ton online.
So yeah.
It's a beautiful textile.
Thank you for that lesson in wool fabrics. No problem. That was very, very informative. I hope that our listeners can go find what they're looking for now. Again, I think Melton, if it's your first time making a coat, just do Melton. It's super easy.
Oh, yeah.
And what about the fact that it's dry clean only? Like, how do you deal with that?
Yeah, I mean, I think you can go a few ways with this. For me personally, if I'm not going to wash my coat, if I'm only maybe going to dry clean my coat.
And even then a maybe.
And even then it's a maybe, then I'm not worrying too much about pre-treating my wool. But it's probably a good idea to do. This is another one of those do as I say, not as I do things.
Yeah, I think it's a good idea to pre-shrink your wool. And there's a few different methods you can use for that. The one that I like to do is to take a couple of damp towels, not sopping wet, just damp, and throw them in the dryer with my fabric. Just damp towels and the fabric right in the dryer. You don't wash the fabric first, put it straight into the dryer, and the steam from those towels in the dryer cycle is going to shrink your fabric. And that's kind of a quick and dirty way of doing it. The alternative is to steam it with your iron, just yeah. like steam the out of it with your iron. And that will also have the same kind of similar effect. You can take it to a dry cleaner too, and they might be able to block steam it for you. They have giant steamers and they might be able to do that for you.
Yeah. And one thing to keep in mind if you are going to go the pre-treating route is that you definitely want to expect shrinkage. So when you're ordering your fabric for your project, order more than you need because your fabric is going to shrink, especially something like a boiled wool. Mm-hmm. If you're pre-treating it, it's gonna shrink. So keep that in mind.
Yeah. I'm with you though. I don't tend to wash my jackets or my coats.
I mean, I'll take it to the dry cleaner, but the dry cleaner, if you're just bringing a coat in, they're not going to steam it, yeah. right? Like you can get them to steam it as a pre-treatment, but they're not going to steam it normally, I don't think. So
I'm not going to lie. I don't know what happens at the dry cleaner.
No, it's a mystery. They just take it into the back and it goes on the little rolly thing and then it comes out clean, right?
We should do an episode about that.
That's actually would be really fun.
What happens behind that rolly
thing?
Do
any of our listeners have any experience
expertise,
as dry cleaners? We want to hear from you.
And when you're storing your wool, you want to beware of moths. Every article I read about wool online had a caveat at the end about moths, and they definitely can eat into your fabric. So you want to take care when you're storing your coat. Ideally, wash it before you store it, dry clean it before you store it, store it in a zipper bag, throw a little pouch of lavender in there that seems to ward off moths quite well. You can use like commercial mothballs, but apparently they're made out of some pretty nasty chemicals. So you might not want that in your closet. So I think the lavender method seems like a nice touch.
Yeah. And if you have a cedar chest or a cedar closet,
yes, I mean, that's ideal.
Lucky you.
Where would I put a cedar chest? My dad would make me one though.
Oh,
maybe once I had a bigger place to live, I can get a cedar chest.
Just keep all your coats at your office.
Yeah, that's true.
Chest. The coat chest. Okay, so we do want to talk a little bit about interfacing, but we're going to let you guys know that we're planning a whole episode on interfacing for early 2019. Yes, so
coming your way.
It's coming your way. So we're going to get even more in depth about interfacing there. But coats need interfacing.
Yes. And not just where you might think. A lot of times when we interface things for a button-up shirt, say you're going to do the collar, you're going to do the plackets, then you're done. Coats need more interfacing. Oftentimes you're going to interface the entire front of your coat and the facing as well, the upper back, all the way across the upper back, underneath the armholes. That's a really great place to interface. You don't want anything stretching out there.
Often the back interfacing piece is going to do both of those things in one. So it'll interface the upper back and underneath your sleeves. It's this beautiful kind of curvy piece of interfacing. Yeah. That goes on the back.
Yeah, totally. And then the sleeve cap is another place you might see interfacing. And the pockets, you don't want your pockets bagging out. So you want to make sure that you're interfacing at least the top edge of your pockets.
Yes. And the bottom hem, the sleeve hem, hems are really, you know, it does really well to interface them because it gives them that structure that they need.
Yeah, totally. I like in the Yates coat how she has the interfacing break right at that point where the lapel folds over.
Yeah.
So it's important to think about how things are going to be folding. And one thing I was reading online is that it's a good practice to avoid interfacing the waist area because that's where your body will fold when you sit down or when you're moving around. So interfacing all over the place, but keeping in mind where things are bending, the elbows, the waist, and anywhere where you have a lapel that's going to fold over, you might want to avoid having interfacing, even if it's just like a tiny strip of interfacing is missing there. That's going to help give you that bend.
Yeah, it encourages that fold to stay in that place. Exactly. And not move around. Yeah, absolutely. So for home sewists, we recommend a high quality medium weight weft interfacing for most coats. So you don't want to go with the lightweight stuff, go with the medium or heavyweight stuff. And a fusible interfacing is totally fine. If it's your first coat, if it's your second coat, if it's your 10th coat, you can use fusible interfacing. You don't have to go that extra mile and do the horsehair canvas or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. And weft interfacing is key. You do want something that's strong, and weft interfacing is strong. Don't get that interfacing that you can just pull apart and it's just fused together and the fibers just come apart. You need it to be woven. It's an actual fabric.
You don't want it to stretch. You don't want one of those interfacings that will stretch widthwise or lengthwise.
Exactly.
You want something that's going to be structured in all directions.
Yeah.
And then if you're working on a collar that needs a little bit of help to hold its shape, like on the Closet Case Patterns clear coat with that really beautiful high collar, you might want to use a horsehair canvas. That's going to give you a really beautiful structure. So something like that, you can find online how to work with that. We're not going to get too much into it, but there's some great books and great articles. Maybe we should round up a few of our favorites in the show notes, hey?
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Okay.
The other resource that I was using when I was prepping for this episode is the Couture Sewing Techniques book by Claire Schaefer. We've talked about it many times on the show, so hopefully you've already got yourself a copy. There's a great section in there about coats and jackets and talking just about how professional interfacing and coats are created, specifically looking at an Yves Saint Laurent jacket and all of the interlinings and interfacings and paddings that go into that. And there's some fun facts in there, like, did you know that once all of the interfacings and backings are cut, it's called the entoilage? Am I saying that right?
Entoilage.
That's what I said. And then often that is sewn in by hand in that professional capacity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Using a pad stitch.
Using pad stitching. And there can be many, many, many layers inside of a properly tailored jacket. Layers of canvas, padding, bias cut cloth, horsehair, all sorts of things layered on top of each other to get the exact kind of shaping and look that they're going for.
Mm-hmm. You can also balance the dart, which is really interesting. Helen, I had to ask you to explain to me how this works. But you're basically applying a piece of interfacing on the other side of your dart. So let's say you're pressing your dart upwards, that's going to create some bulk. So if you balance that out with another strip of fabric below the dart so that there's not like a step happening, it's going to make that really smooth along your bust instead of having like a ridge there from the dart. So it's almost like a little dart hump versus a dart ridge.
Exactly. And another option is to cut your dart open and press it open with melt-in wool because it doesn't fray. That is an option. So that's kind of a cool thing you can do.
Yes.
And if you have a lapel like on the Yates coat, you can baste stitch on the roll line and reinforce that with a bridle that's made from a lightweight cotton tape. So that just gives you a really solid line that the lapel is then going to fold over, and it's going to help again to get that fold.
Love it. Mm-hmm. You may also want to consider sewing weights into your hem.
I've never done this, but I love it as a concept.
Yeah, Chanel jackets use a chain for this, and we've seen coins added to hems. Mm-hmm. But this is a great way to add a little bit of weight and structure to your coat if you feel like maybe your fabric is too bouncy.
Too bouncy, too flowy. Maybe like that opium coat from Deer and Doe, like you could put weights in that and then it would kind of sit down a little better instead of sticking out so much. Mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm. There's so much more in this book. I mean, and it's hard to describe a lot of the things that they're talking about. So I do encourage you to check out this book or another tailoring book just to learn a little bit more about how tailoring is done in coats and jackets.
Woohoo. All right, let's move on to lining. Mm-hmm. So when you're choosing a lining, let's talk about like a few options that we think would be good for lining.
Sure. Well, I think that silk is an excellent option. I know it's a higher price point, but it's a good option when you're working with wool because they have similar properties. So when you're working with them, they're going to behave similarly. And also when you're caring for it, it's going to behave similarly.
Yeah. And when you're looking at silk, you could do like a silk satin or a silk charmeuse. A lower price point silk would be like a silk habitat. Mm-hmm. You'll see that online. If you search for silk habitat, I think it's spelled Habotai. That's sort of an industry term. And that is actually a lightweight silk lining.
Yes. Yeah. I see that in wedding dresses a lot, habitat.
Yes. So you want to definitely choose something slippery for the inside of your coats, especially the sleeves. If you want to go with like a cool flannel lining, that's fine. But do satin or something slippery for your sleeves because you want your arms to be able to slip in and out easily. You don't want to move the lining around as you're moving your arms in and out of your jacket. Mm-hmm.
Rayon Bemberg is one of my favorite linings.
Oh, yeah.
It works really well. It's super slippy. It's a little shifty, a little hard to handle, but I mean, any kind of lightweight lining is going to be a bit shifty. So
yeah,
I always kind of go with the rayon Bemberg. I don't like a lot of warmth in my jacket because I run hot.
Yeah. And rayon is really nice and breathable.
Yeah.
Another kind of a luxurious alternative to a rayon Bemberg is a cupro or a cupro blend. We have a cupro and viscose twill in the shop. I'm not sure if we have any left in stock, but we did carry it for a while. That is a little bit of a higher price point, but it's a beautiful fabric for lining.
Yeah. And sunback or cassia lining is another really popular option out there. It's a more stable lining and it has a satin front and a flannel back. So it's much easier to cut, much more stable, a lot warmer. It's going to add that extra layer of warmth to your jacket without you having to underline your fabric with a flannel or anything like that. It sort of does two things in one, which is cool. Our friend used that for her lining and it turned out great.
Yeah, it's also going to add some structure to your coat. So mm-hmm. that might be a good option for those of you that might be working with a fabric that's maybe a little bit on the lighter weight side or a little bit less of a structured wool. Having a lining like that is going to sort of balance that out.
Mm-hmm. And another thing you can do is add thinsulate. So if you live in some of the colder parts of the world, you want your jacket to be as warm as possible, you can put some thinsulate in between your lining and your jacket. Just beware that it melts like crazy. Do not iron your thinsulate.
Good point. Have you had a bad experience?
No, I was reading Heather Liu's bad experience.
Oh no.
Melting the thinsulate.
Oh, geez.
And avoid poly linings. Polyester can be a tempting lining to use because it is so inexpensive. But in my experience, it just doesn't last as long. And you're going to be so sweaty.
Yeah.
No, who wants to be sweaty in their coat?
Not me. That's for sure. Other considerations that you might want to make when you're planning out your coat is that you may want to have a shoulder pad. Our friend added shoulder pads to her coat because she just likes having that beautiful structured line at the shoulder. Mm-hmm. And I agree. I think that can look really nice. Even if your pattern doesn't call for it,
yes.
It might be a nice thing to add.
Yeah, for sure. And you want to think about how you're going to close your coat. If it requires buttons or snaps or buttonholes, you may want to consider doing bound buttonholes as a nice couture finish for your buttons.
Bound buttonholes terrify me.
I know.
Because you do it in the last, it's like the last thing you do.
Practice. I'm sorry, you're scared? Did you do a practice?
Still, it's terrifying.
It's not terrifying. It's a fun challenge.
It's a fun challenge.
And you may want to invest in some tailoring tools. I mean, I say may. I think if you're going to make a coat, now's the time. Invest, because you're going to be using these tools for the rest of your life. These things should last you forever. They're not ever going to need to be replaced. So a tailor's ham and a sleeve roll will serve you well in all sorts of areas of your sewing. And also a tailor's clapper. I use my clapper when I'm pressing wool to press seams open or to the side. And it just really helps to get those seams to sit flat. It makes all the difference.
Borrow from your friends.
Yeah, if you don't want to buy your own,
you can borrow. I know, I need to get a clapper. But seriously, if you are on a budget or something, ask your sewing friend if you can borrow their clapper.
Mm-hmm. You can also just use a piece of wood.
Yeah.
It works.
All right. And in terms of cutting out your project, we have some tips for that too. So a rotary cutter is a great way to go. Sharp scissors, sharp dressmaker shears. Definitely make sure you're working with a sharp blade, because wool is thick.
It's thick. Yeah. And you might want to cut flat for that reason, because it is so thick. Sometimes it can be a little bit challenging to work with. So cutting flat is a good option. Watch for right and wrong sides with your wool. And you might not have one. A lot of Meltons don't have a right and wrong side. And prints like plaids and tartans, buy extra fabric if you're going to do some pattern matching. And it's difficult to pattern match some plaids on the side seams and the front seam. So I think if you're not going to be able to do both, focus on the front, because that's where the attention's going to be. And don't worry as much about the sides matching up.
Mm-hmm. And big tip, hot giant tip. Very important tip. Watch out for your nap.
Watch the nap. The nap is the natural direction of the fibers. They might fall one way or the other. Your fabric might not have a nap, but a lot of wool coatings do have a nap. So watch for it.
Yeah. So that if you cut some pieces on the nap and some against the nap, then the fabric is going to look different in different lights. So it might appear darker or lighter, but definitely if you're not sure if your fabric has a nap, just to the naked eye, you can touch it and feel it. Run your fingers along one way and run your fingers along the other way. And if it feels rougher one way, then your fabric definitely has a nap. And that means that you're cutting all your pieces in the same direction. Mm-hmm. So top up, bottom down kind of thing.
Yeah. And you want the nap to be running downwards. Yes. Like you want to be able to basically like take your hands and brush them all the way down your body.
Feel yourself
very
down.
Sensual. And it's got to be soft. You don't want the rough texture.
Yes. All right. So when you're sewing, we have some tips for that too. We're full of tips today.
An interesting tip I found is to try a ballpoint needle, because it can actually slip through the wool fibers without ripping them. So if you're having issues with your machine, you might want to try a ballpoint needle. Now, you may still want a really sharp point for felt or Melton like fabrics, because that sharp point is going to be able to actually get through all of those fibers. So experiment with what you've got.
Yeah, use scraps and do some tests. Mm-hmm. You want to use a heavyweight needle. So like a size 90 or 100 needle is a good way to go if you're working with a heavyweight fabric. Mm-hmm. And work with a poly thread or a silk thread.
Yeah, a poly thread will be really nice and strong. And a silk thread, again, has similar properties to the wool. So it helps when you're working with it and caring for it.
And invest in a high quality thread. Like if you're going to be wearing this coat for years and years to come, buy the Gutermann thread, you know, go with
Don't buy the dollar store thread.
Yeah, exactly. Go with the high quality stuff, because the last thing you want is for your thread to break down and start, you know, ripping in places.
Yeah. And we have some tips for setting in the sleeves. We mentioned earlier that this is a bit of a tricky part of the process. So you can use two or even three lines of basted gathering stitches. And you do that just along the cap of the sleeve. And then you pull them slightly to gather them. And that helps you to ease it in. Even after you've basted and gathered, you might want to hand sew it in, because that just gives you so much more control. You're looking to not get any tucks or puckers. And if you do get tucks or puckers, you just rip out those little sections and do them again. You're going to be able to get it eventually. It might be a little bit frustrating though.
Mm-hmm. And if you want to go for a more couture or tailored finish, you can use bias cut fleece or mohair or a strip of hair canvas to help ease in the sleeve. So that extra strip of fabric supports the sleeve cap and it's going to help you ease that in.
Yeah, I watched Gertie's video on this. She has a great video about how to do this, and you essentially stretch the bias cut fabric as you're sewing it onto the sleeve cap, and that helps to gather the sleeve cap. And then it also gives you a little extra support. We were talking about that bump on the end of your shoulder. That fabric that you've sewn in there is going to help support that bump, so it's not going to collapse at all.
I love this tip.
Yeah, it's cool.
We're going to link that video in the show notes.
Definitely.
All right. Bagging the lining, aka birthing your coat.
Birthing your coat. This is the part of the process that I always stand there and I scratch my head and I'm like, what's going to happen when I, and it's like so confusing and it doesn't make sense. It doesn't feel like it's ever going to work. You like sew the whole outside together and then you sew your sleeves together and you're like, well, this is never going to turn right side out. Yeah. And then it does.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're going to sew the lining and shell together and you want to leave a small opening to turn the coat through. So that opening can be in various places. It could be along your hemline. It can be along the center back. It can be also along the sleeve. So then you're going to use that opening to turn your coat right side out and then hand stitch that opening closed.
Mm-hmm. And that's where the birthing comes in, because you essentially have to pull all of that fabric through quite a small hole, and you know, that can be a little bit tricky.
Oh, God. Okay.
So we have a couple of tutorials that we'll point you guys to. There's a great one from Closet Case Patterns and another one from Grainline that have good pictures about how the whole bagging the coat and the lining works. So we'll link that in the show notes as well. And pressing. Pressing is a key part to making your coat. You don't want to put your iron up too high. Wool actually doesn't do super well with heat, so you do want to have it on a bit of a lower setting. You also want to push down and lift up. You don't want to move your iron all around. Do the lift and press method. And you should be good. You'll notice if you get any kind of shiny spots or bruising on your fabric, that probably means your iron is too hot, or you're pushing a little bit too hard, or you're leaving your iron down for too long. Just be gentle. Do some tests.
Use a press cloth.
Use a press cloth. Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
All right. And in terms of finishing, wool is bulky, so you want to avoid those finishing techniques that are bulky, like French seams. Those are going to be too stiff and a little bit awkward when you're working with the fabric. Mm.
And they're not usually necessary because, again, we're not dealing with a fabric that frays very much. Take advantage of the wool's lack of fraying and try just pinking the edges or grading them to reduce bulk in your seams, keeping it flexible when you're wearing it. And oftentimes there's going to be a lining, so this is all kind of moot because everything's inside and you really don't need to worry about finishing your seams. But if you're doing something that has exposed seams, just a pinking probably work fine.
So to wrap things up, we really want to encourage you to try sewing a coat. It's so much fun. It's such a fun project. It's going to make you feel like you can sew anything.
And your friends and family are going to be floored. Like, you're going to wear this coat and they're going to be like, nice coat. And you'll be like, thanks, I made it. And they'll be like, what?
On that note, we have to go finish our coats.
Bye.
Bye. Da 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 da
da da da. That's it for this Love to Sew favorite. Remember, we'll be back in March with our new podcast season. You can find me, Helen, at helensclosetpatterns.com and Caroline at blackbirdfabrics.com and our Love to Sew merch shop at lovetosewshop.com.
We're recording in beautiful British Columbia, Canada, and you can get in touch with us and get links for everything we talked about in this episode at lovetosewpodcast.com. Just search for the episode title.
If you're loving the show and you want more Love to Sew, you can support us on Patreon. Contribute $5 or more a month and you get access to our bonus episodes. Contribute $10 or more a month and get a 15% discount code for Blackbird Fabrics, Helen's Closet, and Love to Sew. Go to patreon.com/lovetosew for more info.
Thanks to our amazing podcast team, and thank you all so much for listening. We will talk to you soon.
See you later. I can't even imitate your voice.
Bye bye.
This is Caroline signing off. Godspeed.
Oh my God.